Ow, he's just bitten me.
Good evening and welcome to a special Tiny Plastic People podcast, the podcast of tinyplasticpeople.com. Joining me tonight is Rich.
Hello, it's me.
And I'm Drew. I thought we'd have a quick get together, and Rich can give us his hottest takes, or maybe rapidly cooling takes, on Salute 50. Was it 50 years of Salute?
It was 50. Yeah,
that seems like a long time for a an anything to be running. So Salute is, am I right in saying it's the biggest wargaming convention in the UK?
I think absolutely in the UK. Yeah, I think possibly in Europe as well.
Okay, so it is bigger than I realised then.
It is currently at the Excel Centre in London, which is a big exhibition centre, and I think including their sort of queuing space, it takes up like three of the big halls there. So
yeah, I was about to ask whether it compares to like a Warhammer Fest or how it compares to a Warhammer Fest, but Warhammer Fest is one big hall and a kind of smaller spaces around it. So yeah, okay, it is significantly bigger. Yeah.
I'd say if you remember the Warhammer Fest from the Rico a couple of years ago, then the hall of Salute with traders and games in, I reckon, is probably as big as the main hall from that Warhammer Fest, if not bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's a few years now since we went to that, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is only a single day event, which I suppose limits it in, you know, that's what a lot of the US cons are. But in general, with all conventions, the US seems to do a much better job than we do in the UK for whatever the subject matter is. So,
yeah, Salute is strange in some ways compared to both like the USA style cons and the like other smaller war game shows like Warfare, for example, in the UK, in that it has all the traders and it has the big demo games, but it issues the bring and buy aspect that is very common in UK wargaming shows, you know, like bring your old 7mm prehistoric ancients and try and sell them for 30 quid to someone.
Yes, yeah.
And it also completely removes like any gaming tournaments that other events sometimes have. So like Warfare, also a one day show down in Berkshire normally. That has normally lots of tournaments happening on the day as well as the kind of demo game setup.
Right, yes.
And obviously the big USA cons like Adepticon and stuff have maybe not as many traders as Salute, but they're centered around like lots of multi-day tournaments.
Yeah, I imagine Adepticon probably has a ridiculous number of traders. In fact, I mean, I have, my con experience in the States is only non-wargaming cons, and they are, I mean, huge. So, but yeah, I mean, it's all a point of scale as well, isn't it? You've got people coming from all over. So, but yeah. So, am I right? You know. I suppose I will. I am the ignorant audience surrogate here because I am totally ignorant of Salute. Am I right in saying that it is, if not predominantly, totally a historical wargaming show?
Yeah, predominantly, not totally. I would say it is very focused around small, for the most part, smaller companies. So you'll get some sort of sci-fi, some grimdark, some fantasy stuff. But then, you know, Games Workshop don't have a presence there.
Yeah.
A couple of big traders like Element Games and Wayland Games had like big stands there. So you could buy Warhammer there and some other smaller stores as well. But yeah, it's very, very historical focused. And, you know, these events throughout the year are how these small sort of one or two people in a shared company is making very specific minis kind of make a huge proportion of their income, I think.
Right, yes, yeah, no, that makes sense. And I suppose, yeah, if you know it's coming up and you're saving your pennies for it, and I mean, I'm assuming sort of Warlord and the like are the biggest presence then, are they? Or
yeah, so Warlord were there. Battlefront, I don't think were. Who do Flames of War and Team Yankee? Didn't see them. But yeah, Warlord were there from a historical's point of view. And then sort of smaller, but still very well-known, like people like the Perry brothers, and from a rules point of view, Two Fat Lardies, I guess, are sort of a pretty big name in rules, but still fundamentally like two guys writing rules in their dining room or whatever.
Yes, I think plus a little bit more, but yeah, they're certainly not they're not to the same level of professionalism, sounds wrong, commitment to the piece as the sort of Warlord or someone is. No.
They're not multi-layer companies doing design, research and manufacture, certainly. Like, yes, there's not a lot of those in the wargaming space. And I guess Warlord are probably the biggest one there at Salute.
Yeah, I mean, Warlord certainly seem to, I don't know, everywhere I've been, you know, either board game or war game in the UK, Warlord have always been, I suppose, yeah, like you say, the biggest there. Maybe not for floor space, because if you're making, some of the terrain builders seem to, by nature, occupy quite a lot of space. So,
racks and racks of pre-made trees.
Yes, yeah, and sort of plastic hills. Plastic hills take up a lot of space. So, cool. So, I'm trying to think what the best way of going through this would be. I mean, how did you structure your day, I suppose? And then we can go on to what your sort of highlights were, maybe. So save your best points for a hot top 10 or top.
Okay.
But yeah, in a general format, how did the day shake out for you?
So I went with a few other people from our little online community. So a couple of them based in London, and then I travelled down from the Midlands, and one other travelled from sort of Brighton kind of area. So we just met at the XL. So we went in about 11:30. So just restrictions of travel, couldn't get there any earlier, but I think it opens from 9 or 10? 10, I think, maybe. The first, I think, 4,000 people through the door got a goodie bag, which included a custom miniature. Like, a lot of these shows have a unique miniature every year that they give out
door.
We, going in at 11:30, did not get any of those, so that is an implication of its popularity.
Yeah, definitely 4,000 people ahead of you in the queue.
Exactly, yeah. So by the time you went in, there was no queue, which was nice, but yeah, and then sort of from the entrance, we literally, like, wended our way through half the hall, took a break for lunch back out in the concourse, came back in and did the other half of the hall. So, and that took up from, 11:30 till half three-ish, probably. So, like, 4 hours. We didn't really stop and take part in any participation games or anything, so we kind of looked at everything. We didn't stop for a long time in many places, so you can get through it in the day, but it's a lot of time on your feet. I had sore feet at the end of it. It's really nicely laid out, though. So it's all laid out into aisles, but you'll have kind of like an aisle of traders kind of back to back, and then you'll have a row of gaming tables, and then you'll have another sort of row of traders back to back, so you can kind of like wind up an alley looking at traders on one side and participation games on the other, and where companies like Warlord was doing participation games and demo games of its new epic Pike and Shot sort of small scale English Civil War
yes,
game.
Yeah, no, I've been tempted by that. I didn't know it was out yet, but
I think it's just out. So they had a big demo table for that, and it meant that they could have that table sort of geographically very near their stand, rather than it being off in a separate hall with all the gaming tables, for example.
Yes, it makes for a better kind of mix as well. You know, a lot of trader places I've been to, you kind of get into the trading hall and then you just look at it and you're like, no, I'm not going in there. It's just like rammed with slow moving, you know.
Yeah. For the most part, it was really well spaced out as well. So very rarely did we find ourselves sort of stuck in a traffic jam, other than occasionally if we were trying to look at a popular stall. So yeah, it was really nicely spaced. I've never been to Salute before, so I don't know if that is a post-COVID spacing out or if it's always been like this.
Yeah.
In the program they gave out, there was some really good like articles on the history of Salute. If it's 50 instances, and sort of like, I think the first time it was in like a pub, then the various places it's been since and how it's expanded.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, just as an aside.
So the was one of the questions I was going to ask, actually, but you have answered that there was a participation games. And was that a sort of decent number there then, or was it, were they the rare? I mean, this is the thing, I'm trying to envisage the hall and what's filling the space up. So obviously traders are X percentage.
Yeah, so the whole hall was laid out like that, and all of the, barring maybe like one or two spaces, like all of the space was full. So there were a good number of things. Like, say there were probably roughly like 100 traders and 50 gaming tables, I'd say, something like that.
But a goodly number, the full, then, yeah.
Yeah, the full lists are online of who was there and what was there. Yeah, I say participation games. Like, some of them were demos and take part of things. Some of them were like participation things for systems that clubs had dreamt up themselves.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
Some of them were the things you always get in these shows where it's like spectacle games where maybe someone might have laid out like Battle of Agincourt or an Allied offensive on a particular German-held town in World War II France or something like that. And it'll all be laid out, and then you sort of walk past it a couple of times in the day and you kind of never see anyone measuring anything with a tape measure or rolling a dice. Like, it's kind of just like almost like a big diorama. So yeah, people aren't necessarily there to play like a game. Like, I expect these are the kind of games that people play on their club nights occasionally. They'll organize to have this big campaign game. They're not necessarily trying to achieve the same thing in that day at Salute, but they are showing off their capabilities and nice board and terrain they've made and the nice models. So
No, that makes sense. It's certainly,
and some people absolutely are actually playing the games as well. So
That's what I'd wondered, because I have very limited wargaming show experience, but certainly the, I was going to say one singular, I think it is probably, one singular, let's say, I've been to. if I wasn't doing participation games, I would probably have finished very quickly going around, but it sounds like you made a full day of it. So perhaps on that note, move on then to what would be your top insert number here, things that you saw or did.
Oh, that's actually really, really difficult. Although I've never been to Salute before, I have been to aforementioned Warfare a couple of times. And like, Drew, I know you've been to, we talked on the pod about your visit to Vapartnak in York as well.
You're like, braver than me by saying it. I just call it the York War Games show. Cause
who knows if I got it right? So there's some like highlights that I always looked forward to in terms of like traders I know will probably be there. If that makes sense. So like one that always jumps out is Bad Squiddo Games, Annie Norman's company making cute scenics and realistic female miniatures for a variety of different eras, and that stand looked super popular. We fought our way in and bought some stuff, but it's always really nice to see it doing booming business, because Annie is pretty upfront sometimes on Twitter when the or on the Sunday morning coffee streams that she does about when business is not going so well, or like, and how important these shows are to the business, which is effectively just her plus some contracted sculptors and stuff, and designers. Like, so yeah, it's really nice to see that stall and like be able to grab stuff in person and see it really busy. So that one's always a highlight. There's a few other companies sort of like that, like War Bases are often at these shows, who make various MDF scenics and also MDF bases. So I always like seeing them, just to stock up on MDF bases.
I could have asked. I was ordering from War Bases on Saturday, and then I was like, I better bloody thingy. Salute.
It's just very pleasing to need a load of 25mm bases and to be able to buy a bag of them for like £1.20 in person.
I bought, I think, 2 or 3 bags at the York show, and I've used them since February, so I've based a lot of Romans and Carthaginians at the moment, and I need more. But
otherwise, what else is good? Sort of in the same vein, there are lots of stalls there actually selling like Perry stuff, but like, it's nice to be able to buy the kits, like, again, directly from the company, at a little bit of a show discount, but obviously, you know, and also not paying postage and just kind of having their full range of plastic boxes in front of you to
pick up
and flip over, look at the packaging and stuff. So that was good. I'm trying to think, like, in terms of top things saw, Warp Miniatures were there, who were run by like a friend of a friend, but I don't think I've seen them at an event before. They make
at the York thing, but I already found that out second hand because I didn't see them there. So
they make minis for a game called Ark World, and lots of them are like super cute, slightly sort of Grimm's fairy tales kind of vibe to some of it, I guess, sort of like cute but kind of dark fantasy
picture book look, maybe is what I call them. They're sort of,
so I've got something on my desk here, so I've been printing some of their STLs actually and painting them. So I've got like a horrible fish man and some little swarms of,
I have an STL for that horrible fish man and I haven't printed it yet, so
it's a cool model. I think he's called the Dark King or something. Anyway,
Fishman.
They were there with like all their minis in person, and all of the person who designs and runs the company, I think the company, again, with some sort of help from others occasionally, is basically one person doing all of the sculpting and then their dad doing all of the casting.
Right. And oh, yeah, they do cast as well, don't they? Yes,
yeah, the person who does the sculpting also, like, paints all of the models beautifully for the store.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just one of these places where it's photos of, like, some metal in a plastic bag. All of their models and their box art and stuff have really nicely painted models. So, and they had basically that entire range of like masters stuff, on display there. So, and all the ranges you could buy. So I didn't actually end up picking anything up, but it was really nice to see some of it in person. And I think I will order some. So yeah, really liked seeing that. I hope they do well. What else was there that I liked?
You said you didn't play any games, but did you look at any games that looked interesting? Anything that's potentially a purchase in future or...
So, yeah, the Pike and Shot epic battles, I think that box is called Push of Pike
mm-hmm.
from Warlord, is really, really tempting me. I got a sprue of guys on the front of a magazine fairly.
Oh, yeah.
War Games Illustrated.
I get the digital version, so I just look at that and think, oh. But I suppose it's purely FOMO at that point, because like four guys in a row isn't very much for a...
And they, yeah, game, given so. That the starter box is like 1,300 guys.
Yeah, exactly.
But those models are really cute. The game looks really nice, all set out, and I've got a bit of a bee in my bonnet about like English Civil War at the moment. So,
yeah, I quite like it. It's one of those conflicts that I feel I get on with quite well, because they're both sides are kind of awful without being super awful, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of like religious turmoil and persecution mixed up in it a bit, but yes, it's not like the even the amount of head scratching some people do about like World War II wargaming. I don't think there's anything like that about doing the English Civil War.
Yes, yeah.
The other thing that I watched a bit of was War Games Illustrated have published or helped to publish Andy Callan's game, Nevermind Bill Hooks Deluxe.
Yes, Bill Hooks, yes, yeah.
And they had a fantastic table set up as a demo game, like using some of the like ancient scenery that they've been using in battle photos and stuff for years. I think some of it was like built by the magazine's founder, like a beautiful old European medieval castle and stuff. So it was on a big, I think like 6x10 board or something,
mm-hmm.
6x8 or 4x8 or something. It was on a huge board anyway, and they were doing like little demos. That's a game I am. Who knows if I'll play it, but I have bought some boxes of Billmen and Archers and Men-at-Arms from Perry and some bases, and I'm definitely going to paint some models for it. And I bought the rule book as well.
I was just about to ask what scale that was in. So Perry's 28, isn't it? So
yeah, it is. Small 28s, but...
Proper 28 rather than chunkers, great big 28. That.
Yeah.
I could be sold on that, certainly, so...
I mean, they say sort of like 80 to 100 figures aside for like a full-size game, which is £60 worth of Perry boxes, something like that. So even though it's a lot of models to paint, it's the classic thing of like you pay and spend a bit of extra time on your front rank and then you like slop them up the rest of them.
No, it's every single bit of heraldry. Are you going for War of the Roses then?
Yeah, so... Yeah. It works across several European theatres in that sort of second half of the 15th century era. But I am going to do, I think I'm going to do War of the Roses. And I think I will probably, rather than just making a big army, I will probably make two smaller armies. So I have some Yorkists and some Lancastrians.
Yeah.
Because then I can make people play it with me. Whereas the odds of being able to turn up for like a pickup game of it are... probably fairly low.
This is
internally
my problem with any historical is that no one I know plays anything, so
yeah. I know Bristol Independent Gaming Big has like quite a big Bill Hook scene because I think Andy Callan lives around there. Yeah. So they have tournaments and stuff for it, but
Thingy had a big meetup for it as well. Somewhere I've certainly been, which is what's the one in Derby called? Boards and swords. Yeah,
is that it?
Yeah, certainly last couple of weeks they had a big Bill Hook.
Oh, nice
thing.
Okay.
Seems
like a really good system. It's fairly simple. It tries to channel some of the joy of rolling quite a lot of dice without being needlessly complicated.
Yeah.
Archers run out of ammo, which is interesting. I think.
Yeah.
So.
I need to give it a look, I think. Was it in War Games Illustrated recently, a battle report for it?
They've certainly had a lot of Bill Hooks coverage,
but
well, yeah, they're helping publish the book, I think. The rules initially came out as like an attached thing with War Games Illustrated, and then it's since become a big bound book, but it's still sort of sold through them. So, yeah, it's very cool. It's I'm looking forward to painting some stuff for it anyway. So yeah, so it was really good to see like a big army in person.
Yeah.
It was good.
Oh, I'll have to have a look at that because I'm certainly tempted. The only thing putting me off would be 28mm because that makes that paints I paint very, very slowly. So
yeah, you can paint an army of that in like 10 or 15mm very quickly, and then at 28mm it's quite painful, right? But
yeah, you can't do heraldry at 15mm. That makes life, you know, considerably easier.
Yeah.
I know there was... Well, sorry, you...
No, go on.
I was... going to say, I know there was some talks at Salute. Did you see any of those? By the sounds of it, you didn't.
No, we didn't sort of take the chance to sit down, but I did think it was interesting that they were setting up some panels for like women in wargaming and hobby heroes. Like Duncan Rhodes was there, and I think Chris Peach might have been on that panel as well. Yeah, so it's interesting to see they were running some of those because I don't know if that's something they've done a lot of in the past. I will note that there was some stuff going around the internet yesterday of, you know, they did this Women in Wargaming panel, but also multiple women apparently when submitting their entries to the painting competition got incredibly patronised. And in one case, when receiving them back, a guy like refused to give them their commended entry card because he wouldn't believe that they had done it.
Oh, so, I mean, that sounds excellent. This is why I stay on the internet, so I can remain
that does
ducked or
sound moving. Like some incredibly backward sexism from a person working on the painting competition stand, not like necessarily ingrained in the structure of Salute. But you know, I saw that. I feel like we're talking about that panel existing. It's worth calling that.
You feel like if you're a volunteer at a convention, there should be a some level of staff briefing, which is please don't be sexist. I mean, there's sexist.
The bare minimum, really.
There's like a not giving someone their models back is an impressive level. I mean, I'd only heard.
Well, I think he brought the model back without the award.
Oh, the award. Like, sorry. Yes. But, no. Sorry. Yeah, yes. Not giving the award. Because I didn't believe in painting them. I mean, that's, yeah, impressive. Impressive level of asshattery there. That's my hot take based on that.
Yeah, I'm shaking my head in disbelief, but, you know, it's perhaps not that surprising, really. But anyway, I don't want to focus on the negative, but...
Oh, we've had to move on to the top 10 bad things from Salute.
Top 10 worst things about Salute.
If nothing else, that's
what we need. Number six.
We need the stinger for the pod title to be like, I went to Salute and I was ...
I went to Salute and all I got was this lousy bill from my credit card company.
Yeah, I mean, we're moving on to rating the food situation next as well. So, you know, the other popular thing to go after.
Well, yeah, the nice thing about Excel is basically a very, very, very long corridor with like, oh, I don't know, 6 or 7 halls off of each side of it.
Yeah.
And then like interspersed throughout, there's loads of cafes and restaurants and like various different takeaway food options. And the nice thing is, if you're willing to just like walk for 3 or 4 minutes to an end where like the halls are closed.
Yeah.
Then you like don't need to worry about it. Like it's chill and there's hardly any queue. So
right, yes, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I'm almost certainly not going to go to Salute because it's 1,000,000 miles away from where I exist.
Yeah, it's like 300 miles from you. So.
Yes, and I could get a very expensive train, I suppose, but then it's still in London, and I don't know how to find my way around London anyway. So. On the theory that I was going to go to Salute, and you know, maybe our listeners will, What advice would you give to someone going to Salute? And I'm aware that you went with people, which always makes everything easier because you can just entertain yourselves at the worst, you know, if you've got friends there. But yeah.
Yeah.
What would you go on your own? Would you go again? And also, yeah, what advice would you give to someone who was thinking about going to Salute or a similar show?
I'd definitely go again. I mean, it was £12 to get in, which is pretty reasonable. Most of these other shows will probably be like 5 to 10. So the fact that the big one in London is only 12 is quite nice. Obviously, there's cost involved in getting there, but that's true of going anywhere. In terms of other advice, I think I would go by myself personally, but I'm like someone who's quite happy just wandering around and looking at stuff by myself and chatting to people.
Yeah.
Going with people was good. The we said when we came through the door, we were like, we're going to stick together, but basically if anyone wants to look at anything, then we'll just stop, like we'll all look at it kind of thing. Not necessarily mm-hmm. like we'll all pretend to be super interested, but there was no like assumption that we were just, you know, walking a set route and then would occasionally have to go like, oh, could we stop, please? It was just like, well, meander. So if you're clearly interested in something, just go look at it, and it's on everyone else to realise and not wander off without you.
Yes, yeah.
I think that worked really well as a good way of doing it. I'd say if you could give it the whole day, so I think the whole day is like 10 till 5, just so you could maybe take part in a game, or a bit of a couple of games is more likely, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Or maybe like watch one of the talks without feeling like you're pressed for time. That's good. The halls are air conditioned, but even in April, I found it really muggy and like hot inside. So just take water and like a snack or two.
Yeah.
And don't wear a million layers. Take couple of bags with you. I took a backpack and I took another bag inside it, like a tote bag, so
yes,
that
yeah,
didn't have to accept loads of carrier bags from people. And yeah, like it just made it a bit easier for sort of organizing everything. But honestly, like I think the most important thing is just like engage willingly with it. So like if you stop and look at a table and then someone who is running that table, be it a table of products or a table like of a game, engages you, like just be earnest and excited about what they want to talk to you about. And, you know, you might go like, I'm sorry, I'm not particularly interested in the Macedonian Wars, but they might still have something interesting to tell you.
Yes, yeah.
Like you're not obliged to give everyone half an hour of your time, but like it's fun, it's interesting to see these niche smaller products and actually like spend some time learning about them. Don't go just to go to the Wayland Games and Element Games stores.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's great if you also happen to want to grab something from one of those, sure, but
yeah,
like you're spending more on getting in than you spend on the postage from ordering from both of those websites. So
yes, that's true. Yeah, I suppose the thing I'd like to, I don't know, not discuss, but, you know, it's like there was obviously an idea, it's certainly in my head, and I imagine in a lot of people's head, that there is this kind of historical war gamer who is this retired man in an anorak. And, you know, the further away you move from that, the you know, the less, I don't want to say less welcome you are, but maybe the more concerns you might have.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's definitely some stigma.
Yes. But, you know, and obviously if there are stories going around the internet which are saying, oh, there was this bad experience I had. I mean, it would be good to see if Salute as a body addresses that, but it does sound like that isn't the you know, the rule, as it were. It's the exception rather than the rule for people there, and that you can go as a non-retired man.
Well, I was there. I'm not retired. I am almost every other stereotype. But, yeah, I people's individual experiences are their experiences, and they're valid and should be addressed and taken seriously. But I do think, broadly, historical gaming is much more welcoming than it appears from the outside. I mean, like, Goonhammer put up a piece this week, as of recording, about sort of pretty firmly setting out their stalls. They've got some really passionate historical war gamers on staff.
Yeah, I know.
Staff, inverted commas.
What caused that piece, yes. Going back to War Games Illustrated.
That was a response to John Stallard saying something very backwards in a War Games Illustrated interview. Not only backwards, but kind of nonsensical. It was complaining about woke culture, and then his description of woke culture was journalists. So
famously, I mean, woke.
Yeah, the famously woke British media.
Yes.
So we don't need to get into all that, but
there is one thing I would like to say with that, though, which is that wasn't covered with the Goonhammer article, was that Rick Priestley was also saying things in that interview that were basically wrong, which was...
Oh, I've even seen Girls Wargaming recently.
You wouldn't have seen that 10, 20 years ago, which is...
Yeah.
Well, one is nonsense, because I, you know, in the 90s were playing games with women, and, you know, okay, they weren't the majority, and they, you know, there are probably fewer of them than there were now, but, you know, that wasn't even the 90s. 90s is 30 years ago. It's like, you know, you're talking here about 10, 20 years ago, and you're like, well, no. And particularly when it's Rick, who has been unfriendly to including women in the community. It's
a strange one.
A weird way to cut that particular cake, yeah. But yes, I think it's important that we do... Yeah, these spaces obviously should be seeing more diversity. I mean, like I said, at the York War Game Show, I felt like I was adding diversity, which isn't a good sign.
I would have said, actually, the crowd at Salute was pretty diverse from a gender perspective, I would have said. It was still pretty white. But,
yes, yeah.
There were lots of femme-presenting people there. So that's good. I mean, the classic Wargamer joke would be to go like, oh, dragging your partner to Salute for a day out. But there were lots of people who seemed to be engaging earnestly in things and enjoying it for themselves. So
yes, yeah.
Wargaming in all its guises is a lot of thing that couples do together and enjoy together, or, you know, like anyone enjoys regardless of gender or anything else. So it is open. I think that, just like going back to that War Games Illustrated interview, they said themselves at the start of that interview, it was basically they got those four people. It was Rick Priestley, John Stallard, Andy Callan, previously mentioned, and is it Pete Brown, I want to say, who's a big War Games Illustrated contributor? Yeah. And they basically took the four of them to the pub and plied them with beer and got them to talk to each other and wrote down what they said. So no one was asking particularly incisive questions. The War Games Illustrated person was occasionally like giving prompts. And it's perhaps then not surprising that those people settle into those trends.
Of the kind of wargamer again. Because, I mean, they certainly all were of a type, is the...
Yeah, and I think the danger is more that the established historicals wargamers sort of perpetuate an incorrect stereotype of themselves by going like, oh, yeah, it's all old white guys, kind of like, and that's fine, or you know, whatever. Yeah. And it's not, and like, it seems like the club you're part of has been trying to do some stuff to promote diversity really recently, and because I know we've chatted about that a little bit, and or at least expressed an interest in doing so.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because I have been to an event recently, and I will not name names because it doesn't benefit anyone to do so, but I went to an event recently that was very much the other end of the scale.
Yeah, so
And there was conversations that I wasn't part of, but things you half hear, and you're like, oh I see. That's a apropos of nothing conversation you guys are having. So, yeah, it is obviously a problem still. And, you know, these people have obviously, like I say, I am not on the internet, so I don't know what's being talked about. But, you know, these are obviously fairly, to my mind, serious things that should be resolved by a body organising whatever these events are and things. So,
yes, I hope so. I hope that South London warlords pass comment on it. It wouldn't surprise me if they don't, but I'll hold out hope. They don't seem like an organisation that does a huge amount of social media at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe they'll, maybe even if they are internally disappointed to hear it, that nothing will come of it. Who knows? But
yeah, I mean, even if you're looking at it in a very mercenary way, that it's like at the end of the day, you're running a show. You want foot. You know, you want bums on seats, you want people coming in the door to buy from your traders, and if you're excluding half the population.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's wrong-ins in all walks of life. I would say broadly, the show itself, I wouldn't feel worried going in. And again, I say this as someone who, in almost all regards, is not a minority. So it's easy for me to say, oh yeah, it's really safe and welcoming. It did genuinely seem like there was a good mix of people there, and that people on stalls, etc., were, and games, were engaging earnestly with people as historical gamers or potentially historical gamers.
I think that's the most meaningful thing that we can say as people who can't have that kind of experience, is that, you know, it's not saying that, oh, it felt safe to me, because that's meaningless. Not meaningless, but you know what I mean. It's as close as meaningless, but you being able to say that empirically the sort of mix of people there were a good, you know, a good mix of of diversity, you know, that helps. That's probably the most useful thing you can say, isn't it? So it's like, yeah, come along and enjoy yourself.
And I've been to smaller gaming shows with female friends before, a specific female friend, and you know, she was, not to put too fine a point of it, like, groped and patronised repeatedly at that show, which is sickening. Like, that was, again, like, a number of years ago now, but still grim. I don't think it really put her onto the idea of going to any more historical shows.
No, that's certainly something that, time to flip some tables.
So, not good. I think even since then, I have seen the makeup of people who are interested in historicals changing. Because, you know, even like people like me, 5-10 years ago, or not even 10, but like 5+ years ago, was just about sort of interested in tanks a bit, like maybe some bolt action. And now, seeing a lot of my generation sort of being way more interested in history and historicals. And I think there's this kind of like millennials downwards are ending up in this position in their 30s and 40s, where previous generations may have already been like really settled into a routine, and like lots of us don't own houses yet, aren't, you know, married or settled down with partner or partners. So I think the overlap of being like a fun, for want of a better word, woke person, but still being interested in historicals, I think that pool of people is getting a lot wider.
Yes. So, yeah.
And no one is trying to delete the Nazis from World War II. Just needs to be said.
Yes. No, it's, I think it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's probably a conversation entirely in itself, isn't it? So,
I mean, we've already gone 45 minutes, and probably 15 minutes of this podcast about Salute has been about woke wargaming.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, it's difficult because, you know, like I say, whenever you talk about historicals, there is a certain way that
it's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant, and that your way you're kind of, you can imagine things, and it's like, obviously some of that is true. It's like, it's never not going to be true, but it's how we meaningfully address it as a community. And I certainly wouldn't call myself as a primarily historical war gamer, but I'm very historical curious, and I'd probably be a lot more historical if I could find any beggar to play with. So
you shouldn't live so far away.
I know, that's the inherent problem of living in the fucking middle of nowhere. So anyway, yes, well, probably, as you say, we've been talking for 45 minutes. It was supposed to be a bit of a short one. Let's not try and do a 3-hour pod on our own. So I will salute you, Rich, for coming on to join me. Yes, well, wish you all the best. You're on to Warhammerfest this weekend, aren't you? So
maybe we'll have a pod about Warhammerfest as well. We'll see. My vocal cords might have run out by then.
Yes, I was going to say, you can't just be our reporter on the scene of every wargaming event.
I can and I will.
Okay, we're live streaming it in future, and you can make reaction noises to the GW reveals and the like.
The honest plastic person.
The most honest plastic person. Except if we go historical enough, we'll have to rebrand to the pewter and metal person. So
tiny pewter people.
Tiny pewter people. Oh yeah, we'd have to change it. We just keep it as an acronym. Excellent. Good work.
Yeah. Super.
Excellent. Well, yeah, okay. Thank you very much, and thank you to everyone for joining us.
Thanks for tuning in.
Rich, do you have anything you want to plug? Instagrams or other podcasts you might be involved in?
Yeah, we'll keep it quick. You can find me on Twitter at Rich Nutter. I think that's right. I post things there, models and such. Also, listen to other podcasts on the TPP feed, including 3 and 2, the Match Play Age of Sigmar podcast that I do with Matthew and Laura. It's good if you like AOS.
It's good. I like it. I like learning about AOS, even though I plan to never use the information I gather from it, but it's still interesting.
Sometimes it's nice to just become an armchair expert in something via the medium of podcasts, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go to even imply expert, but you make words that sound interesting, so that's good. Good. And you can find me at Drew_Paints on Instagram, where I, at the moment, am posting quite a lot of historical stuff.
Nice.
I don't think I have anything else that I need to discuss. No, I don't think so. If you have
tinyplasticpeople.com.
Yes, if you want to contact us, you can contact us at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com.
Do it.
That is right, isn't it? Yes.
Yep, that's right.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much, Rich.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and say good night. Goodbye. Good night.